Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hey, everybody, this is Rob Benedict.
And Richard Spate Jr.
And we are at the season finale of season 3, episode 16, No Rest for the Wicked.
That means Rob Benedict doesn't get any rest.
I was going to say the same thing about you, buddy.
Too bad. I'm resting right now because I am the good one.
Well, I can't believe we're at the end of season 3.
And nor can I believe that season 3 was only 16 episodes. Again, writer's strike struck and shortened all TV.
But I'm having so much fun watching the show, and it's so fun to watch it in context. And, you know, there are moments that I know about, but others that I really have never knew. And this is one of those episodes. We've been joking all season long that Dean's gonna die and show's over. And that was funny to me because in my mind, he wasn't really going to die because it's Dean.
No.
But at the end of the episode, he dies. Dean dies.
Yep, I know.
I couldn't believe it. I was like, wait, what? He actually, the dogs are tearing him up, and I'm going, yeah, but that's a dream, something. We're going to go back in time. We're going to, what? No, final shot. He's in hell.
It shows over.
Jesus.
I know. God bless Supernatural for not tiptoeing up to the line. They leap over it.
Yeah. I mean, it really blew my mind. I had no idea it happened like this. This is all new to me, but let's get into how we get here.
Yeah. Tell us, Robbie, why don't you do that off the cuff summary that you are so well known for?
Okay. Been working on this all night. Dean awakens from a nightmare where he's getting chased by hellhounds. Bobby is able to pinpoint that Lilith is in New Harmony, Indiana. Sam secretly summons Ruby against Dean's wishes. Ruby tells Sam he has the ability to defeat Lilith without her demon-killing knife. She lets him know that Lilith is taking a little vacation and has her guard down. Dean arrives. He and Ruby get into a fist fight, and Ruby really gives him a beatdown.
Yeah.
However, he is able to discreetly steal her demon-killing knife and contain her in a devil's trap. Is there a name for demon-killing knife, or is it just called the demon-killing knife?
No, it's Adam. So, Adam, the demon-killing knife.
Got it. Okay. So Ruby thinks that they're being naive for not using the power inside of Sam. All right, so Dean argues that they can't make the same mistake twice and have one of them sacrifice their soul. So they keep her in that little demon trap.
Keep her, kept her.
Meanwhile, we learn what a demon like Lilith does for fun. She's taken over the body of a little girl, Zoe Fremont, and she's tormenting the girl's parents and grandfather. Brilliantly acted by that little girl, too.
So great. So great and so reminiscent of one of my favorite Twilight Zone episodes ever, but we'll get into that later.
Oh, wow. Sam, Dean, and Bobby head to the location. Sam tries to have a heart-to-heart with Dean, but instead, they blast Bon Jovi and sing along. How about that scene? I didn't know that existed.
So neither did I. So fun.
With Jared Padalecki singing?
Yeah, that was a trip, too. Hear him belt out a few tunes.
And the other funny thing is that Jensen Ackles has sung that on stage with my band, and Jensen has a killer voice and nails it. But as Dean, he almost did it as like someone who not used to singing.
Yeah, Dean doesn't have Jensen Ackles' singing voice,
right,
which speaks to Jensen's commitment to character.
Exactly, exactly.
Would have been easy to be flashy, but he stayed true to Dean.
Exactly. Okay, so while they're on the road, they get pulled over by a police officer, and Dean is able to see that the cop is possessed by a demon and instantly stabs him.
Right.
So they arrive at the suburban neighborhood where Lilith is tormenting the family. Dean sees the demon in the little girl. Ruby shows up, having escaped the devil's trap. It's night, and Sam, Dean, Bobby, and Ruby are now casing the neighborhood. Suddenly, all the neighbors start coming out of their homes.
Why? What's with the neighbors, Robbie?
They're all demons.
What?
Yeah. It's kind of like your street. Bobby has rigged the Fremont sprinkler system with holy water, which gives them...
Little side note for people listening, Rob's one of my neighbors, so yes, I agree.
Bobby's rigged the Fremont sprinkler system with holy water, which gives them a few moments to escape. Sam, Dean, and Ruby run into the Fremont house. Sam almost kills Zoe, but Dean stops him, seeing that she isn't possessed by Lilith anymore.
Right.
Sam wants to use his powers to face Lilith, Dean refuses. The clock strikes midnight, and the sounds of hellhounds can be heard approaching. Sam, Dean, and Ruby run into the dining room and barricade the door. Dean quickly realizes that Ruby is now possessed by Lilith. So the hellhounds arrive and start tearing Dean apart. Dean dies. Lilith turns her attention to Sam, raises her arm, and blasts him with a blinding light.
Yep.
But Sam is unscathed. He quickly grabs the knife, grabs the knife and approaches Lilith. She tries her power on him again, but he is immune. He attacks with the knife, but she quickly evacuates Ruby's body and gets away. Sam cradles Dean's dead body in his arms, and Dean is in hell, screaming in agony for help.
Cue laugh track. No, it's a great episode. Sam, we don't even know why Sam is immune to her, do we?
No, Sam's got these powers are lingering in Sam.
Well, let's just get right into it. It's time for Rob and Rich Review.
Okay.
Go. I feel like I'm going to be the unpopular one here.
Okay.
I thought this episode was a snooze fest until the little girl came in, and then I think the whole thing got awesome. Like, but it was a lot of people chatting.
Uh-huh.
A lot of people talking about what's going to happen, what's not going to happen, what are we going to do. It just felt like a lot of jibber-jabber and not enough. I want a little less talk, a lot more action. That's what I'm looking for. Now, that little girl came in and was so good.
So good.
And that everybody in the family was great. Grandpa was great. And it was so creepy.
Mom, Dad.
I loved that. That took the whole thing right up the food chain for me.
Yeah, yeah.
What were you thinking?
I was okay with it. A lot of times with a finale like this, like I said, you're like, something big's going to happen. And it takes a little while to get going. So it didn't bother me that much. But now that you say that, I can see that. It wasn't like up there with one of my favorite all-time episodes in terms of, you know, content, but just again, in the context of season three, it was as storytelling, I thought it was pretty epic the way that it ended, because I really had no idea that he was actually going to die and get his, you know, insides torn up. And we're going into a realm now that we've never been before.
Never been to that realm. Well, that's what I'm saying. As soon as we joined the little girl storyline, the episode was on greased wheels.
Yeah.
And it was great.
But just storytelling-wise, I've really lost myself in the show. So I'm really watching as if I don't know anything. And right. It's set up that this is the way that it happens. Like Sam and Dean, they're fighting demons, they're fighting ghosts, they're fighting killers, and they always win. And we're basically rooted in a sort of, well, supernatural reality.
Yeah.
But we haven't gone into the realm where they get put into another universe or, you know what I mean? Or in hell or wherever.
Right.
And so I was just really like, from a storytelling point of view, I'm like, what? I was mind blown a bit that we're like, they're going there.
Yeah, they are, and they were, and they did, and there they are. So what do you, from a facial hand standpoint, facial hand? That's our new metric stick.
Yeah.
What, whose human face would you want tattooed onto your hand? No. What, and from a facial hair standpoint, where are you?
It's like, you remember the bass player from Primus?
Duh. You mean Les Claypool?
Yeah. Didn't he have a long chin beard at one point?
I don't recall Les Claypool, the front man of Primus, having a long chin beard, but he might have.
Who had a long chin beard?
Pan the Goat God?
How do you just have Pan the Goat God on your Anthrax?
Oh, yeah, Anthrax. That dude. Yeah. I totally remember that dude.
That guy. So Anthrax.
Okay, so you're giving him the Anthrax chin beard.
Anthrax chin beard because it's different. It's different. I really was blown away. I don't disagree that the beginning could have moved quicker, but just the end blew my mind. So I'm going to go Anthrax.
Yep, that's a solid review. Mine is not dissimilar. I'm going Abe Lincoln. Nice beard, but it doesn't all come together. You know, there's nothing really like it. Some great moments that make me thoroughly enjoy it.
Yeah.
It just didn't have that extra little oomph to complete the whole thing and make it an elevated episode like so many of them have been.
Yeah. Yeah.
So we're going Anthrax and Abe Lincoln, everybody.
Anthrax and Abe Lincoln.
No mustache on this guy, just all chin hair.
Yeah. But I can't say enough good things about the creepy girl and how
that little girl was awesome.
Yeah.
I wonder what did her career go on to do great things? Did she quit the business? Like, what's her backstory? Do we know?
Don't know. Was she Canadian? Where did they find her? All the kids have been great. The previous, interesting that Lilith seems to embody little girls.
Yeah, she was just super fun, that girl. And she did that turn when talking to her dad, and she's like, don't you like me? Don't you want to live here? That's okay, silly.
Yeah, exactly.
It's just great.
Yeah. And she like, awesome. Does she kill an animal upstairs? Is that where there's
blood
on her
dude,
dress?
She kills the senior puss.
Yeah, that's crazy. But yeah, that was great and spooky. Even that scene with the mom going like, do it, kill her, do it. It. And then speaking of turns, I really appreciated the acting of Katie Cassidy as Ruby when then she's embodied by Lilith. And so it's sort of that subtle turn where like,
very subtle.
She's different.
We're very spot on. Very good. Yeah. Very good job by Katie Cassidy throughout.
Yeah.
Throughout.
Yeah. And Beaver, Jim Beaver really.
Jimmy the Bee Beaver.
Elevating into the Bobby that we've come to love, really being their father, their surrogate father.
Surrogate dad, Bobby Beaver. So good.
I love when you just go full Ed McMahon on me.
Full what?
Ed McMahon. So I'm just like, yeah, and then and Bobby's great. Bobby. Great Bobby. Loving Bobby. Really like a surrogate father. Surrogate father, Bobby. Yeah.
You're a good Ed McMahon to yourself. You do a really good, like, this is a one-man show, you know?
Thank you for noticing.
Let's get right into, we know where we rank this from a facial hair standpoint.
All right, well, we have such a treat to join us today and talk about the episode.
There's some low-ranking of barely on set person, right?
No, I'm talking about someone who was the cornerstone of the obelisk that is Supernatural.
Mm-hmm.
And that person is Bob Singer.
Finally, somebody has gotten it right and compared the show to an obelisk. Yeah. Thank you, Rob.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Bob Singer.
He's back.
Dude, you don't get bigger than Bob Singer. You're at the glass ceiling at that point. You're talking Supernatural.
Yes. The executive producer and co-showrunner for all 15 seasons, Mr. Robert Singer. Hey, Bob.
Hi, guys. How are you? Good to talk to you.
Nice to talk to you.
How are you? Let me ask you this, because I know that you're like, you know, you're a man about town. What state are you in?
I'm in the state of denial, but... The physical state is California.
And scene. Thanks, everybody. Great interview. That was funny. Well, welcome back to your home state-ish, where you live. Listen, thanks for being involved in this. This is a crazy, weird season for starters because of the writer's strike. And, you know, I just sort of want to touch on that out of the gate. What was that like at the time, sort of trying to navigate if you're going to have a show or not have a show? Like, when did you know you guys were going to park the car at 16 and be done with it?
Well, when... I had lived through this before, by the way, in 1988, and I had a show called Midnight Caller on, and that was the first year of that show, and the writer's strike hit, and we did, I think, 16 episodes that year, so I'd been through this before. You kind of know whenever the strike ends, you just figure out how many episodes you can get up. There's a lot of squeezing stuff in, you know, you're working at a more accelerated pace, and so you sort of worry about the quality of the writing a little bit, but I don't think that really happened.
No. And was it always the plan to, you know, send Dean to hell at the end of the season and all that?
Generally, what we would do is we would map out the first half of the season and then have a mid-season meeting with all the writers and then figure out the second half. So I can't remember if we knew we were going to send Dean to hell at the end of that year right off the jump, but certainly by the halfway mark, we knew we were going to do it. Yeah.
Right. Yeah, it was really a shocker when you're watching, because you're going, oh, well, this, you know, Dean's going to be saved, as always. But no, he actually dies at the end of the season.
Yeah, and, you know, that that last shot of him in hell screaming, I just think that's one of the most iconic shots in the series, for the entire series. It was really, it was really amazing. I mean, it was great visual effects, and of course, Kim shot it great. And
there's a lot about that show that was, I mean, I guess to Rob's point, it just took a more violent turn than when one's used to the TV hero being saved at the end. This was not that show, you know, I mean, ripped apart by invisible dogs and, you know, blood spurting out everywhere. It was
hanging from hooks.
Yeah. And I guess to follow up on Rob's point, was that by design? Was anything rushed forward because of the strike, or was this the arc you guys had laid out?
No, this was the arc we had laid out. But like I said, I don't remember that we knew we were going to do that when we started the season, but I'm sure by halfway through we knew we were going to do that. In terms of the violence of it, Eric used to say, you know, smoke them if you got them, and as what we did, you know, we didn't hold back on things like that. So,
dude, I first of all, I've always loved that phrase. I've never heard that in the context of making TV. That's awesome. And by the way, I'm pretty sure I've heard you say that in the context of making TV while in a foxhole in England. So, like, you know, I think you.
Well, since that episode, that Pilot Ridge was all about cigarettes.
No kidding. And we smoked them when we had them. Right. So it's just interesting. I think it's one of those behind the scenes things that people never think about in navigating. You know, we think of a strike happening and like, oh well, we got to stop work. Really, it's like doing a figure eight with a cruise ship, because it's much more complex than just we'll work and then we'll stop, because you still have to design a story that fits into the framework you're going to be using. And you know, you mentioned that it was a little expedient at some points. Aside from the writing element, were you ever concerned that was going to adversely affect the production part of it?
No, because I think at that point we were a pretty well-oiled machine going into year three. I mean, we certainly had our bumps in the road, and that's something I can get into later. But that part we didn't really worry about, because the production pretty much had their lead time. Once we were up and running, they had their normal lead time. We didn't rush the start of it so much. The getting the scripts out was the bigger challenge.
Right.
And did you know at the end of season three, do you know that you're going to be picked up for season four? Or was it still sort of up in the air at the end of every season?
I think at that point we were probably fairly confident that we would be picked up. We were doing okay.
Yeah.
I think we planned on that. That certainly wouldn't have been a way we would have ended the
right, series. Right. Dean's dead, the end.
Yeah, exactly. We were counting on getting picked up. Although we always used to write ourselves into these cliffhangers. And it was always a challenge coming back next year, because once we wrote ourselves into these cliffhangers, we didn't really know how we were going to get out of them. I mean,
right.
We didn't know what we were going to do and started season four.
Oh, interesting.
We knew we would get Dean back, but we didn't know how.
Well, and it winds up, you got him back in a kind of a show-changing way. I mean, introducing Castiel really kind of changed the course of the show a bit.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah.
So you mentioned bumps in the road. What bumps in the road do you recall from season three?
Well, the biggest, we had been on the WB for 2 years, and then they merged with UPN, I think it was called, to become the CW.
Right, right.
And the WB people pretty much went away, and we were now with new landlords.
Right, right.
And we got this early on. Before the season started, right, we got this note from the network, the classic network note. We want two women in the show.
What?
Yeah, we want two women in the show. And we said, well, what do they do? And the network executive, who will go nameless, said, I don't care. I just want two women in the show. He said, well, we can't have them riding in the back seat of the Impala. I mean, so we came up with the Bella character, and Lauren was great, and we hired Katie, who was really great in this show.
Right.
But squeezing this in, you know, and with the Bella character, I thought we came up with a really good character, but we sort of realized at a certain point that, you know, she kept besting Sam and Dean. She was a really kind of a smart cookie. We said, well, that's not good that our heroes keep getting bested, so we can't continue doing that.
Right.
And so, you know, that story took a darker turn. The first episode we had her in, I mean, it was really sort of fun and game. It was one I directed, and it was about the rabbit's foot, I think.
Right, right, right. I remember that.
Yeah.
That was really a fun episode. And she, you know, she was great, Lauren. It turned out okay for her. I guess she had years and years on Walking Dead.
Yeah, Walking Dead, yeah.
Well, she seemed to be, you know, Rob and I noticed that she was basically credited, at least, like a series regular on the show.
Yes. Yeah, that's true. I mean, that was the marching orders from the network. It was just the oddest. I always thought it was like a 1970s network note. You know, we need a couple of hot babes and...
Yeah, right, right.
And the show really wasn't that. So we didn't want to pair these people with whatever these woman characters were with Sam and Dean, because we felt they're these two loners on the road fighting, you know, supernatural entities. And
yeah, right.
So that part was a challenge.
Yeah.
You know, watching the episode again, I kind of fell in love with Lauren all over again, although, I mean, she was, you know, it was the darkest side of her. And I thought Katie was great in the episode.
They're both. I'm a fan of both of them.
100%. They both do a great job.
I think it's tricky when you have, I think what it is too for the fans, it's tricky when you have a character who clearly, like you said, is besting the boys or at least going against them. And, you know, no one likes that. You're just rooting for Sam and Dean. So I think that's what was tricky about Bella. But yeah, I think she's just lovely.
She's great. And I know that Rob was a fan of hers in Walking Dead. She's a very talented actress. I will say that as Rob and I have gone through to review all the episodes this year, this season, there have been a lot of chin scratching on both our parts, mainly me, I guess, but about what her point is. And so you saying all this makes a lot of sense.
Going,
I don't, like, out of nowhere, there's somebody who's like series regular credit in the show, just kind of comes in and is snarky and then leaves. I'm like, I don't know what's going on here. It just seemed, and then when you guys did the episode where she reveals her backstory, like she had, Lilith came to her and she had an abusive father. I'm like, oh man, that's great. I mean, like getting to know her a bit really helped flush out her whole journey, which I thought was really cool. Anyway, it makes sense. This is very enlightening and it sort of tracks with how we've been perceiving the character throughout this season as we rewatch the show. It's sort of like, she's awesome. She's talented. She's great at what she's doing, but I'm still not sure what's going on. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and you were right. We didn't have her backstory at all when we started. I mean, that we made that up later. And I think it turned out, you know, really well, and you kind of feel bad for her at the end.
You
even
do.
Completely, yeah, completely. You
know, even though she made this terrible deal that she made as a child. But
Yeah,
we've all made bad deals, Bob. You know what I'm saying?
Tell me about it, Rich. But, you know, I thought in the end it turned out pretty well. I mean, the way we resolved all that. But it was a challenge. It was a real, I mean, Eric and I were going to, you know, put two women in the show. We're kind of looking at each other like, Jesus, what do we do with that?
Yeah, yeah. That's odd.
But you guys did a great job. I mean, I was certainly, both actresses have been massively successful in their own right and were great additions in, like, you found a way to make it work. I see why that's a big curveball, though. You know, you guys ended up with a bunch of great guest stars in season three. Season three was basically like it was a discovery show. You guys were finding people and then they'd go off to be TV stars.
Sterling K. Brown, Charles, Malik Whitfield.
Obviously, Lauren Cohen and Katie Cassidy. I mean, that's pretty awesome. Yeah. I always think that Supernatural had a really great track record of getting guest stars who then went on to do big things.
That's true. Certainly Sterling has grabbed the brass ring.
Dude. Yeah.
And he was great to work with. I like him a lot. He, this is really off the wall, but we were shooting in a high school and we were between the setups. We sort of camped out in the gym where we had makeup and hair and all that. And Sterling and I played a 2-on-2 basketball game against Jared and Lou Bolo. I don't know if you remember Lou, the stunt coordinator.
Yeah.
And Jared was obviously dominating with his height, but Sterling was taking him inside and, you know, they beat That's us fair. Pretty good, but and Lou was banging me around. It was a really, you know, and so you go, okay, we're ready. Right. And I'm going, okay, let me right there.
Well, I can imagine Jared sweating.
Jared sweats when he stands still on an iceberg.
Like, yes, that's true.
That must have been, makeup must have been ready to kill you.
Oh, yeah, they weren't happy. They weren't happy.
No.
You know, speaking of Katie Cassidy as Ruby, she has a great turn in this episode where you get to see her as Lilith as well. So I thought she did a great job.
Oh, yeah.
Now, she doesn't come back as Ruby. Was that, do you recall why? Was she booked on something else for the next season?
I think she may have been booked on something. I really don't totally remember, but I would imagine that she was, because I thought that she was really terrific and we probably would have brought her back. And I think we were down at Comic-Con one year, which, as you know, I avoided like the plague. Uh-huh. I saw Katie at a party and she thanked me for kind of, you know, she says, you guys really got me off the ground with that part. You know, and this was a number of years later and I hadn't seen her in some time, but she remembered me and was thankful for us giving her that. And I guess that part kind of just gave her a little bit more of a nudge and, you know, and then became a a little more successful for her. So she was a sweet girl. She was really a sweetheart.
Oh,
I mean, she could play evil really well, but she was in real life, that was not her at all.
Yeah, she does this subtle shift when she goes from Ruby to Lilith, I thought was really terrific.
Yeah. No, she was terrific. I mean, she could, you know, and she could do things with her eyes, as you guys as actors know. That's, you know, the eyes can tell a lot if you're really on it. And the,
right,
100%.
You know, she would just do it. You know, and that's a God-given gift, I think. I don't know.
No, that is sort of the thing, right? Like, if the eyes are doing something while everything else is doing something else, it's that you can't teach that.
Right.
Speaking of guest stars, also Bobby. I feel like Bobby's role has shifted to from a guy that knew Dad to really more of a paternal figure.
Yeah, like right throughout the season. Yeah, it kind of,
yeah,
he elevated.
Yeah, and really kind of solidified kind of at the end here at the beginning of next season. Was that by design?
No, that was, the part was supposed to be a one-off, and that's why Eric thought it was very cute for it to name him after me.
Right.
I was away shooting, and this became a surprise to me. The only thing that I added to that was, is you should hire Jim Beaver for this part, because Jim's great.
Yeah.
And Jim and I had worked together quite a bit. So, yeah, the Bobby character sort of, you know, evolved. And when you get an actor like Jim, you want to give him as much stuff as you can and deepen the character other than just kind of making him a, you know, a source of information.
Right.
And, you know, being a surrogate father really worked. What was also good and from a production standpoint is because, you know, we never had any standing sets. So once we built Bobby's house, to be able to go back to that set was, production-wise, was useful.
Right.
I feel like in seasons 1, 2, and 3, that you took a couple of runs at having established characters that you would then systematically kill off. But like Ellen and Joe, obviously we talked about Bella, the Ghostface, her kids. But Bobby really was the guy who won the horse race in terms of sticking around. Is that just something you discover in the writer's room? Were you paying attention to network notes? Was it fan response?
Like,
how did you end up landing on, okay, we're going to stick with Bobby. That's going to be our mentor guy.
Well, that character, let me back up. In terms of these guest stars and giving them sort of running things, one of the things that we found in year one was that Sam and Dean were like in every scene. And it was hard on the guys. And, you know, then we said, well, maybe we can split them up so they, on occasion so they can get some days off. But also being able to spend time with these guest stars also gave the guys a break, because it was really sort of a first person show that they were our eyes and ears throughout.
Right.
You know, and that was really kind of that was a tough thing for them to do. So
that
really started us on a little bit on the guest star thing. But what we realized, and, you know, and it became true with other characters, and certainly Castiel and the Mark Shepard character, is that when somebody hit, when somebody, you know, just kind of stuck out and said, wow, they're really good, then we said we should bring them back and we should do more stuff with them and, you know, broaden the show. And it also became good fodder for storylines and all that. So, you know, it was a bit of a lottery about who would get to return more often. In Jim's case, that was a no-brainer. And obviously with Misha, that was a no-brainer. And Mark Shepard, God bless his soul.
He's still alive, Bob, you know.
No, I know.
But, again, Mark, may he rest in peace.
No, it was not a may he rest in peace. Yeah.
We'll be right back.
You can sense it calling out to you.
New reality seeks you.
Join the journey to save Anomaly.
Place where sound is magic. The only way to enter the world is by looking inward.
Along the way, you'll learn potions, chants, and enchantments that will help you both in that reality and yours.
So, answer the call and let your campaign begin.
Featuring the voices of Ruth Conroll from Supernatural and Dead Boy Detectives.
There are ordeals ahead, yet with guidance, you will face them head on without fear.
Todd Stashwick from Star Trek Picard and 12 Monkeys.
When the time arrives, wherever your journey takes you, be there with no attachments.
And R&B singer NC Gray.
There are worlds, realms,
dimensions and realities beyond yours.
Anomaly is a role-playing meditation podcast that takes you into a world of magic and fantasy. You'll be invited to imagine yourself in scenarios such as learning to cast a tranquility spell or exploring a land vanquished by a dragon, but all connected by a shared mythology. The goal of guided fantasy role-playing meditations are to help you cultivate a sense of wonder, curiosity, balance, and joy in your inner world. Role-playing meditation is a form of escapism and relaxation, as well as a creative outlet for the imagination. The first campaign is an introduction to the world of Anomaly, its lands, magic, and secrets. In the 8 chapters, you'll stretch your imagination, learn to center yourself, offer forgiveness, find confidence, relieve stress, and stop racing thoughts. Your true self will emerge, allowing you to manage your goals and dreams without confusion, distrust, or self-doubt. You can find it on Spotify, Apple, and wherever you listen to podcasts. Or visit seekanomaly.com to learn more. Anomaly spelled with an I-E, not a Y.
Seek Anomaly. Hear its magic.
Thanks for supporting Supernatural then and now. And now, back to the show. I know you're saying it's a no-brainer, but you go back now through the lens of history and watch those Ghostfacer characters are fantastic. The whole Harvell's bar set with Joe and Ellen and Ash, and that was really fun and interesting. And really, it could have gone. I mean, Harvell's could have stayed there and become a home base, theoretically. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it could have. I don't know. Eric and I just weren't crazy about it somehow. We just wanted to move on, I think.
Yeah. Well, you obviously made the right choice because the show continued to, you know, weave and bob its way through successful storylines. But it's just interesting watching, going back, if you're Rob and Rich, you're watching and going, huh, I wonder why they didn't land there, because this seems to work. We're obviously not behind the scenes of the whole thing, but, you know.
Well, we would always go for, you know, you'd say, but you go where the story takes you. You know, yeah. I thought the end of the way that thing ended was really dramatic with Harvell's.
It was.
You know, and that was that's good drama. So
absolutely.
You know, so I forget what writer said, you know, you have to kill your darlings, but that was an example of that.
Walt Whitman. I think that was Walt Whitman.
No, I don't think so, Rich, but we can look it up later.
I love his scripts, by the way, Walt Whitman's.
yeah, I know. He did a great job on that.
Do you remember, was there a conversation with Eric and Kim about what hell would look like? You know, this episode ends, like you said, with that shot of Dean hanging in hell. At one point, it was going to be a slaughterhouse, we're told.
We didn't, memory dims on that, but we arrived at, you know, just have him on hooks.
Yeah.
The visual effects department came up with this, you know, this crazy geometric and we just loved it. Somehow was great. You know, we shot hell often, many, you know, in subsequent seasons, and
sure,
hell became whatever it is we wanted it to be, which I think worked out, you know, well. But I love the hell with the throne room and Mark and the hallways and hell and all that. That's always I think that was a image of hell that no one would have conceived except but we did for whatever, but it worked story-wise. You know, if you're going to be the king of hell, you need a throne and a throne room.
No, it's always cool. And this was all visual effect, I assume, except for Jensen. I mean, whatever he was laying on it, the whole thing was a virtual space. Is that correct?
Yes. Exactly. Yeah.
And it leaves it open. It leaves it open that you can kind of do whatever the subsequent seasons.
I don't think we knew at the time we were probably going to go back to hell. You know,
right.
I think once we got him out of hell, that was probably be it for hell. Turned out no, but you know, and what Kim did with the camera there and turning it upside down and moving in. I mean, it was really, into that close up of Jensen screaming for Sam. It was pretty moving.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And Jared's reaction there is so great, too, as Sam, very emotional in that final scene when he's holding Dean's body.
Yeah.
I thought he really nailed that.
Yeah.
We talked about this briefly before, but the structure of a season for Supernatural really took a shift between seasons 3 and 4 because, you know, Monster of the Week became less of a priority and the dynamic between heaven and hell was introduced as the main driving force. Was that a discussion? Did you guys go, okay, we're going to introduce this Castiel character and, you know, bring heaven into it? Do you remember any of that?
I don't think that we had foreseen where that would necessarily go. Eric was resistant to having angels in the show.
Ah.
And I used to say to him, well, I don't know, we got demons. Don't you need angels if you have demons? You know. And finally, when we realized that Monster of the Week might get old, that we needed an overarching thing a little more. You know, I mean, it originally started out the search for Dad, and that was the arc of the year. But that we needed something more because Monster of the Week, Eric originally said, you know, well, if the monsters are Googleable, right? But I think we've run out of Googleable monsters. You know? so making it, you know, less episodic and having a bigger through line, we knew we wanted to do that. Whether that was going to be heaven, you know, we didn't know that Castiel was going to, you know, hit the way he hit. But again,
right.
You know, you get that character, you get Misha and you go, we got to exploit this. This stuff is too good to just let go. You know, we didn't have any grand plan like that when we brought him in, but it quickly became, this is fertile ground right here.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting watching it in context too. You're not getting tired of the stories being told. You didn't know you needed the shift. And then it happens. You're like, oh, wow. It's mind blowing, you know? And
right.
So enjoyable. And I feel like at this point in the show too, you've completely hit your stride and everyone's working top notch and it's Jordan in the mid-90s, you know, it's really terrific. And you just go like, oh, wow. That's, you know, every episode feels iconic, you know?
Well, one thing we learned about the monsters, which is that we gave the monsters their own story, right? And so we would cast some really good monsters. So it didn't matter if we repeated a vampire or repeated this one, because he had, you know, that guy had his own story. That monster had his own story. Eric used to say every villain is the hero of his own story.
Right.
We tried to infuse that into those things. So rather than trying to come up with some made up kind of new monster, we could just go back to some old tropes, but give them personality and give them their own story. That was really one of the keys to our being able to be successful for as long as we were.
Yeah. The demon hierarchy got pretty complex because there's all these different types of demons, like the yellow-eyed and the black-eyed and red-eyed. And some of them turn white. Was that?
Yeah.
Was that like something you had to keep track of?
Yeah. Well, you know, I didn't, but somebody in the office did.
So there was a thought behind it, like, okay, this.
Well, yes, we started realizing that demons needed a hierarchy. You know, they needed a boss. They needed underlings.
Right.
They needed, you know, what was the common demon? What was, you know,
right.
You know, there was the demon that would go out and make deals. That was originally Mark's character. He was, you know, the deal making demon for souls. And it just kind of, you know, expanded from there. It was, totally organic. And, you know, none of it was planned way, way in advance. You know, we just said, well, suppose we do this, or maybe we should do that, or, you know, or visual effects would come up where the eyes would turn white. And you go, oh, that's cool. You know,
yeah, right. Okay. Yeah, yeah.
And it works really well. I mean, you definitely feel like it's almost like insects. Like, you know, you have the drones and you have the you know, the hierarchy. And it definitely helps you disseminate between strata of demons when you're, you know, basing it on something.
I'm just always just impressed with the effects because it looks great.
It looks great. It looks so good. So ahead of its time.
You guys are going to be moving into season 4, I guess.
Yeah.
It's going to take you 15 years to get through all 15 years the way it's going. But
yeah.
Yeah, no kidding.
Season 4 was not fun. I can tell you that. Not fun. The show was good, but there was internal trouble and
This is the year that Cyrus was gone and the other guys took over, right?
That's correct. And Cyrus was gone. That was an edict from the studio. They Cyrus could not get along with the production department.
What did Cyrus do?
Cyrus was our producer.
He was Jim Michaels.
He was the Jim Michaels.
Okay. And like the line producer.
It's not like we ever went terribly over budget on any year. You know, we were doing fine, but Cyrus just rubbed these people the wrong way. And so they had us make a change.
Okay. Wow. It's funny because creatively, I know that season four has some of people's favorite episodes.
Oh, no. The year, it was creatively a really good year, and getting Dean out of hell was really cool the way we did it. And, you know.
It's the year you introduced the character of Chuck, which I know was a huge.
Bit of a nosedive in the show's.
If you look at the ratings for the Chuck episodes, they're not quite up to the other ones. But yeah, then we brought Chuck in. creatively, it was a good year.
In spite of that.
No. Rob, you know, you were one of the, both of you guys were, well, we should got to stick with this guy. These guys bring something to the show. Creatively, it was fine. It was also the year that, Kim passed away. So that
Yeah.
You know, so it was a hard year for us. Really was. It was not a happy time.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting, you know, as being a guest star in season four and coming on and not knowing anybody, you treated the guest stars so well. You really didn't, you couldn't tell at all as a guest, you know, in your house, that there was stuff going on. I remember too that Kim had just passed away and someone sort of mentioned it to me, but it was, you know, the morale was still there, you know, to get the job done.
Yeah, you know, and listen, I always say there's three jobs that can really screw up a set. One is the lead actor, the other is the DP, and you can really have an asshole producer. On set, our show, you know, the lead actors were always great, and the DP was great and brought a thing onto the set, and I was... For me, an unhappy set is I won't tolerate it. You know, when we go to work, that, you know, you're with these people more than you're with your family.
Yeah,
and it's got to be a pleasant place to work, and I just demand that. And if there's an asshole that's screwing things up, I just get rid of them automatically. It's just not worth it to go through that. So you know, and I like to think all of the shows I do have that thing going for it. I'm a real stickler for that. So even though there was a lot of turmoil, the set was always, it was like a haven. It was a good place to be.
Yeah.
That matters a lot. And it shows in the product, quite frankly.
Yeah. Certainly does.
It's too hard to be miserable. Like it's not, making these shows is not easy, man. You guys, every episode, you guys challenge yourself creatively and cinematically. It's super impressive to go back and watch.
Absolutely.
I'm glad you guys are enjoying it.
We are.
Good. We really are.
I tell you, wait, one of the highlights is getting to talk to you, man. Seriously.
Absolutely, Bob. Bob, I hope you'll come back and join us again because your stories are always insightful and fun.
I'm happy to do it, guys. Always good to see you. I'd love to see you guys in person one of these days. And
I would love that.
Yes.
All right, guys. Thanks a lot.
This is Jensen stopping in to say hey and let you know that we've got to take a quick break. I'm about to pop. Hey there, thanks for listening now.
Hey, it's Richard Speight, and I got a question for you. Why are so many dogs suffering with health issues? Actress Katherine Heigl, who's helped save over 16,000 dogs through her foundation, says she's seeing more issues with dogs' joints, odors, and health than ever before. And after doing a ton of research, she feels there's one place we can look to support any dog's health. Their food. So, she decided to create something she could actually feel good about feeding her dogs. It's called Superfood Complete. Superfood Complete is made with over 30 of the healthiest ingredients on the frickin' planet, including several superfoods vital to your dog's health. And hey, all of this sounds fantastic, but the proof is in the pudding, and what I mean is, do the dogs like it? Well, I can speak for my own dog, Luna. She freaking loves it. And that's saying something, because she's no vacuum cleaner, you know. I've seen dogs eat a sofa, but not Luna. Luna is very persnickety, very high maintenance, especially when it comes to what she eats. And Luna went crazy for this food, and I'm loving what it's doing for her. She's got great energy, she looks fantastic, and I'm assuming she feels great. She usually just says, arf, but I'm going to interpret that as, you know what, Rich? feeling pretty good. So how do you get this fantastic food for your dog? Go to badlands.com/SPN10 and order right now to get up to 50% off your regular price order with a 90-day money-back guarantee. If you want your dog to experience all these incredible things, go to badlandsfood.com/SPNTAN today.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Back to the episode.
Bob's so great. I love Bob.
Dude, I could listen to Bob read from the phone book. I just love the man. He's hilarious. So knowledgeable.
So knowledgeable.
Knows so many things about so many things. Fascinating guy to have on. And just a great dude. Just so funny. So smart. So funny.
Feels very lucky to know him.
Indeed, indeed.
And call him a friend. Yeah. All right. All right. Do your thing, Rich. What's next?
And now it's... Now again, once again, it's time for the segment of the program that I like to call what it is officially called. Mythology!
Mythology!
Mythology.
Okay, lots to talk about here. In this episode, we see a great scene where Bobby gets holy water into the sprinkler system.
That's a lot of blessing of a lot of water, you know what I mean?
Yeah. In this and many of the battles the brothers fight, holy water is often used.
Yeah.
The concept of holy water is common to many faiths and cultures.
I thought it was really clever, by the way, if I may say.
That was a great, yeah, great.
In Hinduism, water represents God, or in this case, Rob Benedict. Water is the holiest in the Hindu river. Mm-hmm. It is thought to purify the soul and combat evil.
That's right. Mm-hmm. And in Islam, holy water is mostly used for healing and curing both physical and spiritual ailments.
In Buddhist traditions, holy or blessed water is used in almost all of their rituals and ceremonies.
In many Wicca traditions, salt is mixed with water and it comes to symbolize the brine of the sea, which is celebrated as the womb of the goddess and is used in magic rituals.
And finally, in Christian faiths, though water is mentioned in both the Old and New Testaments and was used for baptism and purification purposes, the first writing about it appeared around 400 AD in the Apostolic Constitutions, which is supposedly written by Saint Clement of Rome. There it is written that it can be used to banish demons. It has developed to play a central role in exorcisms and television shows.
Indeed. You are a wealth of knowledge when it comes to holy water, Mr. Spade.
Well, I mean, I just, what can I say? I love my water. I love to hydrate, and I like it to be holy when I do it.
Well, I do love how Bobby uses it in the sprinkler system. I thought that
was really clever.
Yeah. All right, let's get into the fun facts. So the title, No Rest for the Wicked, comes from a 1988 Ozzy Osbourne album of the same name. The term paraphrases a Bible verse, Isaiah 48:22. There is no peace, saith the Lord unto the wicked.
So no rest for the wicked, the reason why we know that phrase is from an Ozzy Osbourne album? I feel like it was floating around before that, but is that really what, like...
Well, I think...
I feel like it's an old saying where people are like, there's no rest for the wicked.
Yeah, it's an old saying, but I think in terms of Eric Kripke's name, titles of episodes, he likes to use rock references, so I think in this case...
Did you see that the Bible, where it's quoting the Bible verse, there is no peace, saith the Lord. I'm glad Lilith isn't involved in this. That's my point. There is no peace, saith Lilith, unto the wicked.
Saith the Lilith.
Saith the Lilith.
I just laughed at, I feel like there's no peace, saith the Lord, unto the wicked. I feel like it was a game of telephone that took that to No Rest for the Wicked.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Bad. Did you know the original title of the episode was going to be No Quarter?
Well, I love that song and I love that title.
Oh, man. Hum No Quarter. I can't hear that. I'm not hearing it.
It's got that great riff. It's off of the double album.
Physical Graffiti?
Yes.
But give me just hum it or something.
Remember that?
Are there lyrics?
No quarter.
Man, I don't know that song. It's so interesting.
So also fun fact, At one point, Ruby declares, "Hit me with your best shot." "Hit me with your best shot" is a 1980 Pat Benatar song.
Patricia Benatar, nailing it. Yeah. Well, you're a real tough cookie with a long history of breaking little hearts like the one in me. Mm-hmm. Hey, Robbie, before you put another notch in your lipstick case, you better make sure you put me in my place.
All right.
Hit me with your best shot.
Promise?
As long as your best shot's from your non-dominant arm, then yes.
And Sam and Dean sing the song Wanted Dead or Alive by Bon Jovi. Jared Padalecki starred with Bon Jovi in the 2005 film Cry Wolf. Bet you didn't.
Padalecki!
Bet you didn't know that.
Wanted. That's good. Lilith keeping the family hostage is an homage to the 1961 Twilight Zone episode, It's a Good Life.
Which you mentioned.
Based on the 1953 short story written by Jerome Bixby.
Bix.
No relation to Bill. In it, a child with godlike powers keeps a group of frightened adults captive who must keep smiling and thinking good thoughts or risk death. This episode was included as a remake in the 1983 Twilight Zone, the movie. Zoe Fremont's name is a reference to the little boy played by Billy Mumy in It's a Good Life. The Simpsons did a spoof of that episode in one of their Halloween horror episodes as well.
It's a Good Life. Okay.
Yeah, when Bart was like, could do whatever he wanted, and like, it's good that you did that, boy. It's good, you know. I remember that Twilight Zone episode. It was super creepy.
Really? Billy
Mumy, who went on to be the kid in Lost in Space.
Okay. I didn't remember that episode. Interesting. And
go back and watch it as Twilight Zone. It's really creepy.
And I remember the Twilight Zone movie, and I don't remember it from that either. That was the one that had they also remade Gremlins, the airplane.
Yeah, Gremlins on the airplane with John Lithgow instead of William Shatner. But
exactly.
I don't remember that from the movie either. I'm with you. But I remember the original.
Interesting. Todd Lockwood, who is an illustrator made famous for his artwork in Dungeons and Dragons books and the Magic the Gathering card game, drew the illustration of the Hellhounds in the book Dean Fell Asleep Reading.
Oh, that's cool.
I did take note of that it was just a fantastic picture.
That's really cool. Yeah, that's awesome. This episode takes place on May 1st and May 2nd in 2008. Sam's 25th birthday is May 2nd, 2008. Coincidence?
What?
I think not.
Wow. Mind continually blown.
Blown.
Wow. Those certainly were fun facts.
Those are not just facts. Those are fun ones.
They're fun facts.
Yeah.
Well, this was, this is
anytime
a good one.
You get Bob Singer on a podcast, you got a good show. You know, I said
show.
It.
Yep. You said it, and I agree with it.
Yeah.
All right, buddy. Well, that's it for season 3. We will, be back with a season 3 wrap-up episode.
Yeah, so we will. When we wrap it all up, or as the fabulous Thunderbirds like to say in their blues classic, wrap it up.
Yep. I was going to say the same thing. You took the right out of my mouth.
Liar.
The old Thunderbirds. So, yeah. So, stay tuned for that, and we'll see you shortly.
We'll see you later, everybody, for the wrap-up.
This episode of Supernatural features Jared Padalecki as Sam Winchester and Jensen Ackles as Dean Winchester.
Guest stars included Katie Cassidy, Jim the Bee Beaver, Sierra McCormick, George Coe, Jonathan Potts, and Anna Galvin.
No Rest for the Wicked was written by Eric Kripke, directed by Kim Manners.
Editing by Anthony Pinker, music by Jay Greska.
Executive produced by Eric Kripke and Robert Singer.
The original broadcast of the episode featured the following songs. Carry On Wayward Son by Kanzas.
And Wanted, Dead or Alive,
by Bon Jovi.
That's right. This episode originally aired on May 15th, 2008.
This episode of Supernatural Then and Now was hosted and executive produced by Richard Spade Jr. and Rob Benedict.
Produced by Stephen Hine. Written by Stephen Hine and Hayda Holscher.
And edited and associate produced by Trey Booty.
What's up, Booty?
Music provided by Tim Wynn.
The episode was recorded with the help of Sonic Fuel Studios.
This podcast is from Story Mill Media.
Follow the podcast on Instagram and Twitter at SPN Then and Now.
And please, do yourself a solid and us a solid and become a member of the podcast at www.patreon.com/SPN Then and Now.
But you don't have to put in the W's. Okay, thank you so much. But But
by the way, may we just tip our cap to producer Steve Hine when typing this summary for the proper use of the umlaut.
Over naive. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I you heard it in my pronunciation, right?
I did. I was like, yeah. Do we have a Nordic guest host? No, that's just Rob Benedict.
Yeah.
Tapping into his umlaut center.
That's right.
Storybell Media.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.